Our next speaker is Mike Lofgren, who is a self-described refugee from the problem we are trying to expose. He worked for 28 years on Capitol Hill as a national security analyst, most of that time for the House and Senate budget committees. Since leaving the Hill in 2011, he has written two books on his experiences. Lofgren represents no political party, faction, ideology, or organization. His views are strictly his own, based on what he has seen. So the title of his talk today is The Merger of Corporations and the U.S. Government as an Underlying Cause of the Current Nuclear Situation.
Now for something completely different. I am not a nuclear expert. Rather, I spent my career in the political world of Capitol Hill. It was a world that gave me an abiding faith in the non-existence of mankind's wisdom. At least the wisdom of those who presume to speak not only in America's name, but in humanity's name. That is why I left the place and wrote a book about the partisan craziness that rules it. You can see it here. The party is over. Now I am in the middle of writing a book on a topic I shall discuss today, the deep state. Nuclear weapons are not just big bombs with nasty effects. They are the ultimate expression of the power of a distinctive form of American governance. When Hillary Clinton hinted at nuking Iran by saying we could obliterate it, she was revealing a distinctive attitude of our governing class. Now, where did that attitude come from? Are such people subject to democratic control? You hear similar statements from elected and appointed officials, think tank experts, and so forth. That is the typical mindset of those who have assimilated the values of the American deep state. I use the term deep state to mean an informal association of key elements of government with top-level finance and industry, and which rules the country with only limited heed to the consent of the governed, that's us, through the formal political process. During the last several years, the media have been flooded with pundits condemning the broken politics of Washington. Conventional wisdom says that the partisan gridlock and dysfunction are the new normal. We are always threatened, as we are today, with government shutdowns, and governance is on par with a banana republic. And Obama, it's very evident, is impotent as far as getting his domestic agenda through Congress. Yet despite this gridlock, President Obama can kill American citizens without due process, detain prisoners for years without charge, and conduct dragnet surveillance on Americans without a warrant. At home, this power is expressed through massive displays of force by militarized federal, state, and local police. Abroad, the president can start wars without so much as a buyer leave from Congress. And these are not isolated contradictions. They are so pervasive, they tend to be disregarded as background noise. During 2011, a year so poisonous that I left Capitol Hill, when partisan political warfare over the debt ceiling began to paralyze governance, and the Treasury was juggling accounts to avoid breaching the debt limit, the United States somehow scraped together $1 billion to overthrow Muammar Gaddafi. Nothing could go wrong there. Yes, there is another government beneath the one visible at either end of Pennsylvania Avenue, a hybrid of public and private institutions ruling the country and linked to, but only intermittently controlled by the visible state, whose leaders we nominally choose. Those who seek conspiracy theory to explain this will be disappointed. There is no secret conspiratorial cabal. Using conspiracy to explain the functioning of a complex society is like belief in intelligent design, a pseudoscience which imagines wisdom teeth tonsils and appendices resulted from a grand designer's infallible plan. Evidence tells us that those features arose by tiny degrees over eons as random adaptations to chance and necessity, and they are not always optimal designs. The deep state, like a set of infected tonsils, is hardly optimal, but it became ascendant over our traditional democracy as a result of historical circumstance. The deep state is not the whole government, and it's not just the military-industrial complex. It is a hybrid of national security and law enforcement, plus key parts of other government branches. The departments of defense, state, homeland security, justice, and CIA are all components. There's also the Treasury because of its power over financial flows, enforcement of international economic sanctions, and its symbiosis with Wall Street. A lot of sanctions day-to-day execution is left to American megabanks like Citi or JP Morgan in the same way that the Pentagon outsourced military logistics to contractors in Iraq. Some parts of the judiciary belong to the deep state, like the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, whose actions are mysterious even to most members of Congress. There are also key trial courts, such as the Eastern District of Virginia and the Southern District of Manhattan, where sensitive national security cases are tried. The final government component is a rump Congress of congressional leadership and some but not all members of the Defense and Intelligence Committees. The rest of Congress, normally so fractious and partisan, is only intermittently aware of the deep state, and when required, usually submits to a few well-chosen words from its emissaries. While all government as a whole may be attentive to the desires of all corporations, the deep state components are even more intimately linked by a web of money, mutual goals, and careerism to certain key elements of corporate America. These elements include the military-industrial complex, Wall Street, and Silicon Valley. One former NSA insider told me the spy agencies are completely dependent on Silicon Valley's technology and cooperation to perform their mission. The membrane between government and industry is highly permeable for the personnel. The Director of National Intelligence, James R. Clapper, was an executive of Booz Allen, the largest intelligence contractor. His predecessor, Admiral Mike McConnell, is now vice chairman of the same company. Booz Allen is virtually 100% dependent on government business. The Carlyle Group, a private equity firm with $189 billion in assets under management, owns the majority stake in Booz Allen's government business. Washington is the most important node of the deep state that has conquered America, but it is not the only one. Invisible threads of money connect the town to other nodes. One is Wall Street, which supplies the cash to keep the political machine operating as a diversionary puppet theater. Should the politicians forget their lines, Wall Street floods Washington with cash and lawyers to help the hired hands remember their own best interests. It is not too much to say that Wall Street may be the ultimate owner of the deep state and its strategies, if for no other reason than it has the money to reward government operatives with a second career lucrative beyond the dreams of avarice, certainly well beyond the dreams of a government salary man as I was. The deep state's control over politics renders moot the question I raised at the beginning as to whether policy on nuclear issues or any other policy is subject to popular control. In practice, the American political system allows only two parties, both of which are wholly dependent on corporations and the wealthy. These two parties engineer electoral laws and gerrymander districts so that third-party alternatives are unelectable. It is a system that would have been familiar to the Whig oligarchs of 18th century England. Martin Gillens of Princeton and Benjamin Page of Northwestern examined 2,000 opinion surveys of public policy and correlated those preferences with outcomes. Quoting Gillens here, "The preferences of economic elites have far more impact upon policy change than the preferences of the average citizens do. Ordinary citizens have virtually no influence over what their government does in the United States," unquote. In the 2012 campaign, President Obama told a group of wealthy donors that included Microsoft moguls Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer, "You now have the potential of 200 people in this room deciding who ends up being elected president every single time." The visible state, whose doings you follow on C-SPAN, may be breaking down, but the invisible state's machinery has been steadily expanding. That is the paradox of American government. Drone strikes, data mining, secret prisons, panopticon-like surveillance of citizens' private lives on the one hand, and on the other, visible institutions of self-government declining to the status of a banana republic amid the decay of public infrastructure. The ruling structures of complex societies are not uniform. They are a coalition of dominant factions operating by an unwritten agreement that cooperation is better than open strife, and that a clash between factions' conflicting interests should be shelved, or at least hidden from public view, in favor of long-term advantage. But critiques of the separate components of the deep state tend to view them as standalone structures, rather than as cooperating factions in a larger social environment. Few have posited these separate institutions as related and synergistic components of a much larger story, the transformation of post-World War II America from a quasi-social democracy to a political oligarchy maintaining the outward form but not the spirit of constitutional government. The United States has evolved a governing structure that made possible both the rapacity of Wall Street and the culture of permanent war and constant surveillance. These superficially distinct phenomena are outgrowths of the same political culture, so they must be seen as related. The state within a state that promotes and benefits from militarism, a plutocratic boom and bust economy, and a totalized surveillance state is hidden in plain sight. Its operators pursue agendas which are hardly secret. As the political scientist Harold Lasswell observed over half a century ago, society's leadership consists of people whose, quote, private motives are displaced onto public objects and rationalized in terms of public interest, unquote. Now, all societies have an establishment, a social network committed to its own enrichment and perpetuation. But in terms of scope, financial resources, and sheer global reach, the American hybrid state is in a class by itself. Sheer quantity has a quality all its own. That said, it is neither omniscient nor invincible. Far from invincible, its failures, Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, its incapacity to anticipate or respond to the greatest financial crash since the Great Depression, even its blindness to the obvious potential for a hurricane to drown New Orleans, are routine enough that only its protectiveness towards its higher-ranking personnel allows them to escape the consequences of their ineptitude. Far from brilliant conspirators, mediocre thinking and careerist hackery are what makes the system's operatives stand out. The deep state is a wasteful and incompetent method of governance which reduces economic growth and weakens true national security. But it persists because its perverse incentive structure towards failure dresses it up as success. Its pervasive corruption and creation of synthetic bogeymen anesthetize the public into a state of mind composed of apathy, cynicism, and fear, the very opposite of responsible citizenship. The deep state also invests in diversionary strategies such as scapegoating when it is necessary to externalize domestic social tensions onto convenient foreign targets. How did I come to these conclusions? As a specialist in national security, I was on the fringe of this world, if neither in it by full membership, nor of it by psychological disposition. But like everyone else, I became partly assimilated by the culture of the institution I worked for, and only slowly, before the invasion of Iraq, did I begin to question the motives of the people who are, to paraphrase George W. Bush, the deciders. Cultural assimilation is what psychologist Irving L. Janis called groupthink, the chameleon-like ability to adopt the views of one's peers and superiors. This syndrome is endemic to Washington. The town is frequently swept by fads, whether it's biennial budgeting, grand bargains, or invading countries they can barely locate on a map. As in the military, everyone gets on board, and it is not career-enhancing to question the mission. As Upton Sinclair said, it is difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends upon his not understanding it. The American government, together with dependent corporations and those who make up the satellite organizations of contractors, campaign donors, and influence peddlers, constitute the most complex institution in the world. This institution has evolved into what sociologist Max Weber called the iron cage. The cage is a metaphor for the relentless pressure on actors to conform to the expectations of the organizations they work for. Weber saw that while bureaucracies are supposed to employ rational decision-making, actors within them end up behaving irrationally. Modern societies create police and courts to safeguard liberty, but institutional logic impels those agencies to violate liberty because officials insist they must do whatever it takes to keep us safe. Rules also bar nepotism, bribery, or insider trading. So an institution evolves ever more subtle practices to allow legalized corruption, such as political action committees and 501c4 charitable organizations. At bottom, societies create bureaucratic structures to solve problems. During the last 15 years, the deep state has done a horrible job of averting or overcoming crises in national security and ensuring a national economy that serves the needs of the majority, not to mention preserving their liberties. But shadow government has created a fog of soothing propaganda to ensure its own perpetuation while protecting the reputations and incomes of the senior players. It has also kept virtually every single one of them out of jail. No one above enlisted rank has served prison time for torture or other crimes associated with an unjustified war, just as no senior Wall Street executive with the mega banks landed in jail for the mortgage and securities frauds that caused the 2008 financial collapse. During three decades on the Hill, I watched the deep state steadily strengthen its grip on our government as it inflated threats, promoted the longest military buildup in our history, invaded the wrong country in the most egregious foreign policy blunder of my lifetime, and imposed disastrous financial deregulation that nearly wrecked the world economy. Now it seeks a second Cold War. It is with all that in mind that we must gauge the competence and the prudence of the deep state and its players with respect to our topic of mitigating the risks of nuclear war. You will never get a handle on the nuclear weapons problem unless you cure the pathology of the deep state and its actors. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Mike. Now, unfortunately, Mike can't stay for the Q&A. He has a train to catch. I know that I should have said it before, but I'm sure you can look him up and figure out how to get in touch with him if you have questions.